Hey friends, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and this is episode 189 with registered dietitian Meredith Renshaw. Meredith is the lead registered dietitian at Free Method Nutrition, a virtual group nutrition practice that exists to equip women with the skills to overcome and the wisdom to move beyond the narratives of diet culture. Meredith is committed to helping women never diet again and overcome guilt and shame around food by empowering them with the knowledge and skills to navigate food and body thoughts with confidence. Now, if you know my story, you know that I personally really struggled with my body and food and exercise, especially in college. There were many aspects of college that I loved. I mean, it's really where I fell in love with group fitness. I fell in love with nutrition. But for me, there were definitely moments where I took it too far. So today, Meredith is going to talk to us and hopefully to you, your inner college student. Maybe you too experienced something like that similar in your life, that I hope that you can reflect on those moments and hopefully just get some clarity from your history with food, nutrition, and exercise and have some understanding about where you are now. And again, get clarity for where it is that you want to go. Or maybe you're listening to this and you're in college. I hope that you have some tools and you gain some insight of what's normal, what's disordered, and how can I make steps to navigate that and really find the fun in a healthy way in this really awesome season of life. All right, on to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears.
Meredith, welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Happy Thursday. Well, at the time of this recording, lots to celebrate, but let's start with just your story. Tell us about yourself. What's your story with food and fitness, and how'd you become a dietitian?
Yeah, absolutely. I always joke and say, like, because I get this question often, I'm like, I need to come up with a better story, but I also want to be that, like, validate people whose stories, like, aren't, you know, super dramatic. And like, I grew up in like a home that was like very, like, food was celebrated and like my body was never judged. And now working, and we'll get to this, but working in intuitive eating, I see a lot of people that that's not the case for them. And so I always like to really preface, like, even when talking about my own story, grew up in a home where food was celebrated and food was always safe. Food was always available too. I think that's really important to know. But my body size was like never questioned and had a really healthy relationship with food growing up. And I think important to know that there was healthy relationships displayed for me too. Like, that's what I saw. But really, nutrition found me. I always say that in college. So I went to college. I like vividly remember going to like my orientation. I went to the University of Tennessee and having no idea what I wanted to do. And kind of, you know, you take a little quiz, questionnaire, whatever, like, what are you good at? And so then it gives you a couple options. And so one of them was studying nutrition, which would obviously take me the route of becoming an RD if I wanted to. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I love the idea of helping people. I knew I wanted to be in some dynamic role of like talking to people. And then I saw with nutrition, you didn't have to take a foreign language. And I was like, I think I'm in. Like, that sounds great. That is like not my strong suit at all. I do not have a second language, which looking back, I'm like, dang, I wish I would have done something that I would have learned that. But, and that was like going into nutrition. So I signed up for that, took my first nutrition 100 class, which is, you know, kind of the basic nutrition class. And that was like really the first time that my eyes were open to what that even meant. Like, what is nutrition? Mm-hmm. And kind of being able to understand like food has the ability to like affect our bodies. I've never thought of food that way. Like I have always just thought of food to be something celebrated, enjoyed, you know, you eat every day and you move on with your life. And so I think that opened my eyes, gave me a huge, like newfound knowledge of like food groups and calories and just this basic understanding of how food plays a role in our bodies. And so I think I wanted to like exercise that knowledge. Like I found after that Nutrition 100 class and being like, wow, like I know how to count calories. So like, let's do it. Like, I want to count calories because I know how to do that.
An assignment, a lot of, at least in my undergrad, definitely. It was, that was definitely an assignment of like keeping a food journal, using my Fitness Pal or Super Tracker when that was around and worthless.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. track your food for 3 days, which I had never done. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing that people did. And so of course, little me, like I went on to do that. And I think I soon like stepped into like very quickly this identity that like I had this like power and this knowledge that like not everyone had. And that I was like the really healthy girl. I was the nutrition friend. I think a lot of, well, none of my friends were studying nutrition with me. Like all of my friends that I kind of went to college with, I went in state, so I knew a lot of people and they were all, you know, business majors, engineer majors, things like that. And so like, I really got to take ownership of like, oh, I'm studying nutrition. And I think also kind of all at the same time, like college was really the first time that I got to see other people's relationships with food play out in front of me. And I remember like, you know, you go to the like cafeteria when you're a freshman. And I remember like going to get my favorite foods, whatever, like waffles or, and hearing people say, or like even the friends that I was with say like, oh, I'm like, I'm not going to eat like carbs or like, I'm not going to eat bread. I'm like kind of doing low bread right now. And really being like so confused how I had made it like 18 years of my life without ever having that thought, and really began to question like, why have I never thought about that before? Like, what have I been doing wrong? So kind of starting to really see other people's relationships on display, and at the same time getting this newfound nutrition knowledge. And I think it was just sort of the perfect storm where I became really obsessed with food and with calorie counting, and found myself really frustrated when other people didn't like want advice from me, like kind of that role of like, I have this power. I am the expert. I have this knowledge. Why aren't you finding like what I'm doing like intriguing?
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways it like became my like party trick of like, oh, I can show you how to like do the low carb version, or like, I can show you how to like have a healthy swap. Like that was a big thing.
Yeah. Oh, the substitutes. Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, totally. And so I think like, I say all that too, to validate the girl who might be listening that thinks like, oh, I'm not like what I'm doing isn't, you know, counting calories, that's not wrong. Or like everybody does it. Or like I had a super healthy relationship with food. And I just think everyone's story is like really valid, regardless of like what that looks like compared to others.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like have come to know more of the aspects of intuitive eating. And so kind of like fast forward a little bit, like really like lived that out in college of like, I'm the healthy girl. I'm the girl that studied nutrition. I'm going to be a registered dietitian. Everyone praise me, whatever. And knowing I was going to go the RD route, getting into a dietetic internship. So I actually ended up going to Vandy in Nashville, Vanderbilt Medical Center. And so I think I like kind of lived through a little bit of the intuitive eating. And I think it honestly, the obsession became exhausting in a way of realizing like, wow, this is like counting calories and like doing the swaps, like is way more energy and way harder than like what I was doing a couple years ago, of just like eating what I wanted. And for me, and I don't know about you, but intuitive eating, the idea of food freedom and like eating what makes you feel good, like that wasn't something that was ever taught to us. And so it's almost something I discovered on my own and kind of with the influence of people through social media and things like that. And so again, fast forward, became a dietitian, and I actually got the opportunity to take my first job at Vanderbilt University. So they opened up a position for the like dietitian position to serve college students, like as their kind of campus dietitian. And I took it and was super excited. And it was one of those things that like on my first day, my boss, who is not at all related to like nutrition. Like he was a businessman. It was like, okay, like do what dietitians do, like do whatever you learn to do.
Do whatever you do. You're like, I know I just got out of school, but what do I do now?
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I graduated like 2 weeks ago. So like, I don't even know what that means. Which looking back 2020 hindsight was a huge blessing because it essentially allowed me to like create the job to be whatever I wanted to be. I don't know if there wasn't a dietitian before me, which was kind of the big trip. There was nothing to like learn from. And like so
a blessing and a curse, right?
Yes, exactly. And so what I found was because, like I mentioned, I love talking to people and love education and just love being able to like connect to people on a different level than just passerbys. And so what I found was I started offering nutrition counseling of like, you know, I'll help people kind of, you know, understand food better and kind of the idea of intuitive eating without really naming it that. And so opening that up to be a resource for college students, like all of a sudden I had this huge influx of students like landing in my office and the conversations all sounded so similar, like over and over and over of just college students in my office, specifically college women, but not just college women, like really struggling with food, disordered eating and the relationship to their body. And sort of this aspect of like getting to college and being responsible for food for the first time in their lives. And that being really overwhelming and getting these mixed messages from others and social media. And I just like felt that so deeply because I remember my freshman year of college being like so overwhelmed and even having those thoughts and being really overwhelmed as a nutrition major, like senior year. And so again, fast forward, sort of the opportunity to go into private practice, which is what I do now, and work from an intuitive eating and food freedom, health at every size lens. And I have just run with it. And so having the background with college students is really where that is my ideal client in a lot of ways, because I know the process. I know the process of like having a meal plan and being in a dorm and not having access to stuff and, you know, dining halls not being close to where you live and things like that. And then also this huge, huge pressure from diet culture in the college setting and how that plays a part in that. So all that to say, now working with Free Method Nutrition, which is virtual private practice where we help people navigate all of that. So that was a really long-winded answer, but I hope that tells you a little bit of how I got to where I am.
I love that. And that's, you know, that's part of why I invited you on the show to talk about college in particular. And I love hearing your story because I think my own story has a lot of parallels as well. As, you know, grew up, food really wasn't that big of a deal, right? It was just part of what we did. But how college and a lot of just the people around you can influence it, right? Regardless of where you've been and where you are. So let's kind of dive into that. How is diet culture so prevalent in college? Like, how does that even show up? What does that even look like?
Yeah, gosh, that's a good question. And I think college just presents itself as this like melting pot of people. And if you think about it, I mean, people are coming from across the country, everywhere, different backgrounds, you know, different families, different experiences, all going into one place. And really, not to say that everyone in college is in that age group, but most people in college are in the age group between 18 and 22. And so putting people in this little bubble, essentially, and really, it's the first time that a lot of people are leaving home in that way and sort of like going out from under their parents' wing. And that looks like a lot of challenges, but also really trying to like find your own identity. And so I think like all of those sort of aspects play a part in what diet culture looks like in college. And so essentially it just becomes this breeding ground for diet culture. And so first time being responsible for your own food choices, which can be really overwhelming. And I think I experienced that firsthand. But then when I worked at Vanderbilt, really seeing the struggle at hand of food was always on the table or food was made for me or my family went out to eat or whatever that looks like if you were fortunate enough to have those experiences. But I think getting to college and just suddenly having to remember, oh yeah, like someone's not going to hand me breakfast. I have to go get it if I want to do that. And so the other huge part of that, which I know that we're all familiar with, is this concept of like the freshman 15. like the daunting.
You read my mind, because I was going to say there's levels to it, I think. So let's start there. Let's start with that freshman year, the typical, you got to go to college, you're living in a dorm, you've got dining halls in the fresh, the quote unquote, freshman 15.
Yes, that it is like the, it is like the Loch Ness monster, like this thing that's going to get you. And if you're like lucky enough to get out without it, like you should, you know, consider yourself one of the chosen, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's this concept that like, when you go to college, you will go completely out of control with food. Like you will lose yourself. And I think in some way, knowing almost like the behind the scenes, a lot of dining halls and cafeterias and things are like all you care to eat. So it's this sudden exposure to a lot of food, and food that is totally by choice. Like if you want to have chocolate chip cookies for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and fourth meal, like you can. And maybe that wasn't an experience you had at home. So food has this entirely, like was introduced in a whole new way. But I think another huge aspect of that freshman 15 is binge drinking, like the part that that plays in a college culture. And that is not to say that that is like everyone's experience, but I think it's safe to say that is a part of a lot of college campuses and in the culture that's there. And so kind of the ideas that come around that binge drinking is, yeah, late night eating of like, oh yeah, if you late night eat every night, like you're going to gain all this weight. Or, mm-hmm. you know, the thought of just the disordered decisions that happen around binge drinking, which is huge, absolutely huge. And I think that that can cause and contribute to a lot of like body image, like the way that you see your body. And then of course, with that, increased depression, increased anxiety, comparison, playing that constant comparison game to the other people that you're exposed to all the time. And then with that comes like the actual action followed by that, which might look like skipping meals, like saving your, I'm doing air quotes for those that can't see me, saving your calories for like drinking at night or like going out on the weekend with your friends. And then that huge black and white shift of, if you're good all week and eat clean and exercise and do all the things all week and restrict in some way, like you can go ham essentially permission. On the weekend. Yes. And drink and eat whatever you would like. And so that, that huge like disconnection of weekdays versus weekends is where that sort of diet culture like thrives and continues to grow and grow. And I think within that bubble, the way I described college is, no one realizes that that is disordered or that that mm-hmm. is diet culture planting and growing and really growing roots deeply because everyone's doing it.
What are some of those specific situations that you saw a lot with your students that you worked with? You mentioned like skipping dinner before you know that you're going to go out drinking. What were some of those things that you found were really common and happening with a lot of students?
Yeah, that is a one, definitely skipping the meals, like with the intention of knowing, like, I'm going to drink a lot tonight. And so I'm going to save my calories, which as a dietitian, like, it's just not doesn't work that way. And I think mm-hmm. there is a lot of education to be done. And knowing also, like, when you restrict, you are more likely to binge. And so then people were like really confused. Why am I so out of control around food when I am drinking? And obviously when you're drinking, you have a little less self-control. I'm sure there's technical terms for that, that I don't know, but we let our barrier down in a right. lot of ways. And so then more of that like primal hunger came out where you're like the person just needed to catch up on the calories that were skipped mm-hmm. all day. And then of course the next day, those huge feelings of shame and guilt. And so that was really the next disordered, like probably the next most popular that I saw that immediately follows that one is the over-exercising and the restricting following the binge drinking or the binge eating that really went hand in hand. And so even that trying to work off, again, I'm doing air quotes, work off the calories that were taken in through alcohol or with late night food or whatever that looked like, through extreme like over-exercising and clean eating and low carb and things like that the next day or the week following. And so those are probably two really big ones, but I think ones that kind of played a part too were kind of the like skipping meals without realizing it because you get so busy. Mm-hmm. I mean, any college student, they have all their classes. They have extracurriculars. They're part of clubs. They're, you know, if they play a sport, like whatever, like you just get so, so busy. And so this kind of lack of self-care I saw was really popular too, of waking up late, skipping breakfast, and then having a granola bar for lunch, and then having to go to class or having to go to meetings and skipping snacks, and then getting to dinner, having a, you know, normal, whatever you want to define that as, having a dinner, and then being so confused why they're starving at 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of led to binge eating and the feelings of guilt and shame the next day too. So kind of that like busy schedule and sort of losing track of how to care for themselves, to where you come from high school probably, and high school there's a set lunchtime, or your mom packs your lunch, or you get lunch from the cafeteria or whatever that might be, but the time was given. Where college, you have to make that time. You have to mm-hmm. you have to set aside the time to feed yourself, because no one is there to remind you, hey, go eat lunch. And so I think kind of all of that together were probably some of the most popular.
It sounds like it's really this domino effect and all these like micro decisions that lead to so much of those bigger kind of disordered issues. You know, let's go back to the exercise piece, because for me, that was a huge part of my journey. But I remember so vividly that being normalized, like you wake up from a night of drinking, and there was always those girls that are at the gym right away, or going out and running 6 miles. And if you weren't that girl, there was a lot of shame. Well, why can't I do that? So what are some of the things you see as far as exercise and how that gets out of control?
Yeah. Exercising after drinking being a big one. And I think because there is a culture around you are better if you exercise, or if you can bounce back quicker from your hangover, whatever that might be. It's almost that like work hard, play hard, like concept of yeah. like, if you work really hard and you're super clean and you exercise a ton and you've got it going on, sister, you can party harder and like you can engage in more play. So I think that they're really black and white thinking that way. But I think the other part about colleges or like universities is that to my knowledge, people are offered like have a membership to whatever gym it is. And so, which is wonderful and can be a blessing in a huge way that that's included in your tuition and things like that. Cause I think there's a lot of good with movement and be having access to that. But I think knowing that it was accessible to everyone and sort of this culture of work hard, play hard, that is where people really got into that rut of, I have to exercise almost to earn my right to eat or drink whatever I want on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was fortunate enough to work at a rec center. I taught group fitness, and we were trained to be aware of people trying to do multiple classes or, you know, coming multiple times per day. But I feel like that's a perfect example too of maybe somebody didn't have access to classes or things like that, where it was, like you said, very easy to slip into that overexercising and that disordered behavior. But we talked a little bit about that just stress tolerance. What do you feel like was just the overall stress with students in college, that like, do they just function at a higher level of stress, or what makes it so hard for self-care?
Yeah, I think the busy schedule for sure. The desire to succeed, whether that is pressure that they have put on themselves or pressure that is coming from home, or maybe you're on a scholarship and you have to succeed in a certain way or you will lose your scholarship or whatever. And so I think there's just all of this pressure, and it's almost like college is set up to, you go to college to become who you're going to be. And like, you got to leave college with, you know, X, Y, Z all checked off and have all of this and got it together. You have to have a job before you leave, or you're going to be going to grad school, going to med school, whatever. It's like this really big pressure to perform and to be somebody. And then I think, yeah, I think it just cultivates this experience that you have to be perfect in college, like the perfectionistic. Mm-hmm. It's almost just like this like blanket that is on everybody to perform like in a certain way. In even speaking like personally, when I worked at Vanderbilt, like that being a really hot, like a lot of super brilliant people, and almost the concept that in high school, they were all the most brilliant, the smartest, you know, they have the best resume, and then coming to a place where everyone else there was that in their high school, the competition is just suffocating. And it's so hard to feel like there's any room for self-care. Mm-hmm. Because if you take a nap because your body is like screaming at you that it's exhausted, like you're considered to be lazy, or that's a time that you could be exercising, or that's a time mm-hmm. you could be finishing your paper or whatever. And so I think these expectations are just laid on to these college kids in a way that self-care is not promoted, whether that is through rest or through like joyful movement instead of excessive exercise, or comfort food instead of clean food, and things like that. And so I think it catches up to them. And it's also the first time that they have probably left their maybe safe place at home and have kind of gone into the world and kind of feel like they're in the deep end. Like they just got kind of dumped in the deep end and suddenly have a lot of responsibility and a lot of expectations. And I just find that self-care is the first to go.
This episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour was sponsored by the Reboot Bootcamp DIY online course. If you are ready to kickstart into a non-diet approach, but you're not quite ready to invest working one-on-one with a dietitian, this is for you. Maybe you're ready to dabble. You're a doer. You want to do your research, learn more about yourself and this non-diet approach. We'll take you through our four-step process to reboot your brain, restore your metabolism, recharge your fitness, and ultimately retain your results by ditching the diets for good. I will take you through my signature program, understanding why diets haven't worked for you. Learn how to make sustainable change that's free from guilt, shame, stress around food. Learn how to fuel your body with the foods that nourish and sustain you. And of course, address the movement piece. How does that tie into this non-diet approach? Use the code FFHH for $250 off. Just go to katiehake.com/join. Registration is limited to 10 people, so be sure to check it out as we close the doors this Friday. All right, back to the show.
Absolutely. And you kind of got me thinking, we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the short-term issues this creates, but what happens, and maybe you see this in some of the clients that you work with now, like how does this all or nothing mentality, overachieving, you know, perfectionist type tendencies, how does that create issues for women, but also men later in life?
Mm-hmm. Definitely setting up the idea that if you don't do it the best, then you're a failure. Like there's not a lot of room for grace. And I think that the black and white thinking of either you're winning or you're losing, or you're the best or you're the worst, like kind of not having any room for error, which obviously is piled on with like guilt and shame of just not being enough. And then I think mm-hmm. when we live in a culture that sets the standard of you should be this size, or you should have this BMI, you should, you know, be able to fit in this size pants or whatever, that plays a huge role in the way that you choose to spend your time and the way that you care about yourself, but also the way you think about yourself. And so we are such a product of the way that we talk to ourselves. And I just saw something, gosh, I wish I knew the number. We have something like 6,000 thoughts a minute or something. Don't quote me on that. Something like that, where we talk to ourselves all day long. And so when we are a product of, I'm not good enough, I failed, I am the worst, like we in kind of that black and white thinking, because someone else is always going to be better than us at something. We really start to believe that about ourselves, which can ultimately affect, you know, many, many areas of our life, especially our mental health. And so I think the concept of black and white thinking can very easily lead to increased anxiety, increased depression, and just decreased ideas of like self-worth. And with weight specifically, so many people tie their worth to their weight. And so if you don't feel like you're winning, quote unquote, winning in that area, then your self-worth is much lower, or that you believe it is.
Yeah, it's so tied into dieting. We talked about stress tolerance and this black or white thinking, this all or nothing mentality. I think a lot of college students, they don't consider themselves dieting. And I feel like that's even more prevalent now in this kind of day and age, is that, oh, I don't diet. but there's a lot of those diet-like behaviors. And just like you said, you can only do it for so long until you can't. So how do you see these problems like evolving after graduation, once they're in that first job or that kind of next chapter of life?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think kind of even reflecting on the work that I do now, especially with college students, that's a lot of the times our goal is to be able to function in the world, because honestly, the real world is so different than college. But a lot of the times the patterns that you learn in college are the patterns you're going to continue to follow after. And so it's going to be like a newsflash if you have always woken up late and skipped breakfast when you have to get up and go to work at 7:30 in the morning. And so that's not to say that I encouraged every single one of my like college students to wake up early, but kind of more so a lot of it is mindset of like understanding and knowing like you are a person that is a work in progress. Like you're not going to come out of undergrad or even grad school or med school, whatever, and be exactly who you plan to be for forever. Like we are evolving and growing individuals. And so I think that black and white mindset can continue really easily outside of college. And when it comes to dieting, of like, oh, I eat clean on the weekdays and then I eat out and drink and do fun things on the weekend. But if I would never do those on the weekdays, and really creating that hard boundary that they think is healthy in a way, or they think that they are setting themselves up for success because that's like what's been modeled for them. But really it creates opposite of flexibility, inflexibility, to where they can't necessarily function in all like settings based off of their like beliefs about food or the beliefs about themselves or beliefs about exercise. And so I just think it makes for a very rigid life, and it takes a lot of unlearning. Honestly, it takes a lot of time to like unlearn those behaviors, to be able to learn like newer and healthier behaviors.
Yeah. I like how you said just that rigidity, that's not sustainable even in the real world, even when it seems like, oh, I'll have more routine and structure and it'll be better, but that's not life. I mean, I think we're learning this in 2020 more than ever, that things are going to happen, right? And we have to be able to adapt and be flexible. So what are some of the opportunities that you know of that are available on college campuses that maybe people are or are not always taking advantage of?
Yeah. And I'm sure they differ from college to college, but usually most places have free resources, whether that is obviously like student health center. If there is a dietitian on campus, definitely try to take advantage of that. Usually there's a counseling center too, you know, and I encourage too, when you do those things, like approach it with curiosity. Because even like as dietitians, we know that not every dietitian is going to necessarily believe the things that we believe too. And so I think going in with certain goals of like things that you want support in and what you want that to look like can be a great way to advocate for yourself of, I want to, you know, really work toward having a healthier relationship with food, or I want to work toward having a more sustainable relationship with exercise, and really being able to advocate for yourself. And you might not be able to even like put a finger on those things yet, but I think it's great to approach providers with curiosity and really try to see what they're all about. And I think having those free resources on a college campus can be super helpful. And then of course, a lot of them have like school groups or clubs that like promote overall wellness. And I say overall wellness very specifically because you don't want to necessarily fall into a group or a club that maybe promotes like pursuit of weight loss or intentional weight loss, and unhealthy behaviors and habits. So even any sort of club that is just doing overall wellness. And if that includes ways of like slow or joyful movement or understanding what it feels like to eat to fullness and things like that, not just fitness, because I think fitness can have a lot of different definitions. So all that to say, like, definitely worth researching, because there is probably, I mean, college campuses are just full of opportunities. And I encourage you too, if there's not one of those, make one, like make one of those groups if that is something you're interested in, because I'm sure, and actually I'm positive that other people would appreciate and would gain something from a group like that if one doesn't already exist.
That's such great advice about just being curious, because I think that's really one of the great things that I loved about college. And I wish I had this insight, of course, back then, of just, it's such a time where you do have that opportunity to try new things, to be open to new ideas, to talk to people who think or eat or, you know, have this different relationship around food and exercise in their body. But can you come at it from a place of curiosity, not as I have to do this or I have to do that? That's great advice. What other tips do you have just for navigating diet culture and finding, you know, food freedom, especially in this fun, but what we've talked about, very stressful part of life?
Yeah. One of the first things that I suggest to a client that I'm working with is to do a diet culture detox. And that can look like a lot of different things, but most of the time that is going to be removing things that suggest diet culture to you or influencing you. And a lot of times I know those can be triggers for clients of mine, specifically social media, looking at you, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the things. And so really almost the Marie Kondo, like, does this bring me joy? Like asking yourself that. Because if you feel obsessed with someone's food YouTube channel of like what you eat in a day, clean eating, keto, whatever, if that brings you stress, or if you find yourself constantly thinking about it or comparing yourself to it, that is probably a sign that you should take that out of your life and unfollow that, put it away, whatever, unsubscribe, whatever that looks like. And I think there's an opportunity to like replace those accounts with other things. And so maybe that's unfollowing a fitness guru who makes you feel really bad about your body and replacing it with a dog account. That's just a personal one. I like love dogs, but replacing it with a dog account, or replacing it with, I don't know, home interior accounts or funny meme accounts, like anything really, just replacing it with things that do bring you joy and that aren't triggering to you. And so you're not continually exposed to that, because we are such a product of what we consume. And I don't just say that as in a physical way of like what we put into our mouths, because we know that can be true, but we are also such a product of what we consume with our eyes and our ears and like what we see. And that's especially social media. And so just, you can have an opportunity to grow so much more when those are removed. And I think even finding like-minded people, men or women, like finding people that believe or want to believe the same things that you want to work toward, because it's going to be really hard to work toward a intuitive eating or self-care mindset when you are surrounded by people that do not do that. And I think it's a great thing to want to influence others, but it's really hard to be the one black sheep who does things differently. And so even if that is people on social media, even if it's not people you spend your time with or that you talk to consistently, but exposing yourself to those type of people. And so, yeah, that can be like individuals like you and I, like that, what we do on social media, but also just other people that want to believe the same things that you do. And then of course, like really trying to listen to your body, and you are going to be your biggest advocate in all things. And so really listening to your body, eating foods that you love, finding movement that is joyful to you, and being able to really try to access that out of a self-care lens of knowing I got to care for this body. Mm-hmm. I live in this body and I can't move out of this body. So I might as well take care of it. And so kind of even asking yourself some of the things that you can do to continue to care for your body. If that looks like eating other foods or slowing down on exercise or asking for help, like getting mental health support, all of those things can be options and kind of help you get to that place of confidence outside of diet culture and really finding food freedom.
So many great tips. I think whether somebody's in college, just graduated, or maybe just listening and reflecting on their own experience with food and fitness during that season of life. Oh, so good, Meredith. Where can our listeners find you and learn more about Free Method Nutrition and the work that you do?
Yeah, my Instagram is at Meredith Ren, R-E-N dot R-D. So again, Meredith Ren dot R-D. And I share a lot of free content on there. We have like free modules and a free handbook, just lots of resources. And then always want to offer the opportunity to have conversations about this, because I think if this does pique your interest, but it sounds really scary, like that's normal and you're not alone in that. And I think there's this misconception too, that if you want to pursue food freedom or step into intuitive eating, you have to be 100% ready, which is totally not true. Mm-hmm. You can say like, wow, that sounds amazing, but I don't even think that's possible for me. And I have had so many conversations that start with that, and they end up so differently. And so I want to break the misconception that you have to be 100% ready to like change your life. I think even just following along with what we share, with what our team shares, you can get a lot of really awesome, great content that can potentially change your life.
Right. Like you said, it's being open, it's being curious, and that's where it starts. And sometimes that's enough. So good. Such great information and resources today. We're going to end with a little rapid fire. Are you ready?
I hope so.
Favorite podcast or book right now?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Favorite book. This is so cheesy, but I'm in the middle of rereading Intuitive Eating, and it's crazy what reading a book the second time can do. Like you read it, you're like, great, I hear all that. The second time it like soaks into you like you are a sponge, which is also, I should have mentioned that, like that is also a great resource for anyone interested. So slight plug for, you know, the ladies that wrote that book. And then podcast, oh my gosh, I love Imagined Life, which is a really cool podcast. If you've never heard of it, it has nothing to do with food or nutrition, but Road Trip, it's a great podcast. Anybody gone on a road trip recently or coming up, definitely look it up. Imagined Life.
Is it like sci-fi? What is it?
So it's basically someone is talking in first person. They're talking about themselves and like telling their own biography. And it is a famous person. And they don't say till the very like last line of the podcast who they are. So you're like listening and you're trying to figure out who the famous person is. And then at the very end, they'll say like, I am, you know, J.K. Rowling or whatever, like someone that most people know, but it's really cool. And it keeps you really engaged because you're like, and they give very like specific facts about their life and stuff like that. And then I always like, I'm trying to figure out who it is until the very end. I'm really bad at it. My husband can get them literally within the first like 3 minutes. So it's almost this game we play of like,
it's a good road trip.
Oh yeah. Passes time so easily. So yeah, that's a good one.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet for sure.
Cooking or baking? I think you just answered that question.
Actually, cooking. I am really not, like baking to me is a science, where cooking, it's like you just do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, like you just throw it together. And so I am not good at baking. So I would have to pick cooking, but I do love sweet. So if you bake something, give it to me. I'm all about it.
You bake it, I'll eat it, I'll cook.
Yes.
And we'll start. Perfect. Love it. And what is your, I mean, obviously the intuitive eating book, but what is your favorite non-diet or intuitive eating resource right now?
Yeah, definitely intuitive eating. I would say there's lots of other podcasts as well. So Free Method does have a podcast, our podcast, which is Food Freedom Podcast. And then honestly, any social media, I mean, following intuitive eating accounts, following non-diet accounts, there's so many out there. There's so many incredible women that do this work, it is worth a follow. So even just going and searching there is an awesome tip. But I literally use intuitive eating like a textbook. Like I flip back, go to the back, flip forward. So it's a great resource for anybody that's interested in knowing more.
I like what you said about social media too. I think Instagram, at least particular, there's a large community and it makes it feel like, oh, there are a lot of people who are taking this approach. I'm not crazy. I'm not alone in it. And last question, what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Ooh. Oh gosh, it's been such an uneventful week. We made really good tacos the other night and a big fan of tacos. So honestly, that might be the best thing that's happened to me this week is the tacos that I love ate it. That 2 days ago.
You couldn't have answered that one better. So good. Well, thanks again so much, Meredith, for joining us on this episode. We'll be sure to link to your Instagram, all the resources that we mentioned in this episode, and can't wait to connect over there.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.